Hi, this is Viv Sutherland, and welcome to Women's Studies. Myrna Lamb is here with us in the studio today, and we're going to be talking about her new play, which is opening at the Public Theater in 10 days.
January 20th.
That's 10 days. That sure is. It's called Apple Pie, and I've just come from a rehearsal, and before we get into talking about the dynamics of the play, I would very much like to ask Myrna right now to give us an outline of what the play is, because I've only seen pieces of it, and I am presuming that those people who were kind enough to tune in now haven't seen any of it.
No, they haven't, unless they saw the workshop last year, or went to Buffalo and saw the college workshop. But Apple Pie is a music theater piece, which I've been working on since 1970. It has had 8 complete revisions. And it is episodic, you might say. It's an odyssey. A woman's life from approximately the 1930s to the present time. But it isn't just a woman's life. It's a particular woman's life. I hope there are universal factors, but this woman is born in Nuremberg, where she learns her lessons from what a society which determines at a moment's notice who is the criminal and who is not the criminal. Now, one day her father's a hero, and the next day, Kristallnacht, her father becomes a criminal in the eyes of her society. She sees men with guns. She sees her mother's response to the men with guns. Her mother, in order to protect her, seduces soldiers away from her. Mm-hmm. So she realizes that a little girl crying doesn't work. But this works, she says, an orgasmic cries. This works, this they believe.
Yeah.
Now, the directorial concept, the way it's being set up, is that this woman starts by deciding that she will stage her own trial in a series of variety acts. And she will stage it for her own enjoyment, and she will also stage it in such a way that she gets acquittal, because she will control all the characters. Mm. All the characters emanate from her.
Mm.
So she says, sometimes we lose the line between our own invention and what is true.
Mm-hmm.
At the very top of the show, because we've made things true so often or seen through so much that it all becomes monstrous, terrifying. Creating gods of pure insinuation, whatever. I never remember my own lines. Whatever it is, she sets it up so that all the people only work when she operates them.
Mm-hmm.
But as the play progresses, music theater piece, I should never call it a play because obviously it's just, you know, music there.
Yeah.
And we do it in various styles. There's a blues number where appropriate, there's a waltz where appropriate, a German waltz, there's an anthem where appropriate, ragtime where appropriate. Things do not stay, needless to say, under her control.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately she goes back into old sins. That's how she perceives them. Ultimately, she is her own self. The various aspects of herself are in collusion against her. And we come to a rather exciting finish. Exciting and expected, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a moment of hope at the end. Oh, anyway, what they call a tabula rasa, I believe. A blank slate. Anyway, she's
right.
Got a... When everything freezes into the past. Now, a lot of this is about survival.
Mm-hmm.
What it takes to survive. It takes being a person who oppresses others sometimes to survive.
Sure.
A lot of this is presentational to the audience, accusing the audience or challenging the audience. In my opinion, the Teutonic aspects of this society are things that the hero of the piece, Lisa, can relate to very well. That is the self-judgment, the impossibly high standards, the grandiose and capitalistic way of judging yourself. And I think that, I mean, I know how hard I've worked on it. I know it's the best work I've ever done. But it doesn't make it easy to stage, as you saw today.
Yeah, yeah. There were, I would imagine that things get like that towards in the last 2 weeks of any rehearsal.
But no, it's
complex. it's incredibly complex. But that's something that I pick out anyway in almost anything that I've read of yours or seen of yours is the fact that there are layers upon layers upon more layers of complexity. And nothing is ever what it appears at first sight, or at second sight, or even at third or fourth, because every time it's like watching something with mirrors.
Well, there's a theme in the play, mirrors, that's funny, mirrors and guns. Well, you know, it would be okay if I were a Pinter, Beckett, Genet.
Sure.
My name and my sex, you know, were different.
Yeah.
But people really distrust complexity and mystery in women.
Right. They sure do.
And you pay a penalty for it. And most of all, what apparently is wanted was a very clear line to this, which I think the person who's directing it now is the composer, Nicholas Myers, with some help from me and an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Papp will be coming in tomorrow night. And seeing the work that's been done, we've had to revamp directorial concept. We started out with a director and choreographer who wanted to avoid coming to terms with the material by doing a kind of dance interpretation.
Yeah.
So now we have, I think we have a very clear line now. I think it's really working. It's very direct and very evocative and very powerful, which is all it can be. And I happen to also think that the music is extraordinary. Otherwise, I wouldn't put up with a composer. But it really is. And the scenes will work. We'll have projections donated to some extent. David Mitchell is the production designer, and Richard Lindner, who is a world-renowned painter, who has the same basic history that Lisa has, interestingly enough, is donating some of his ectochromes to be used in the projections.
Wow.
And material will be projected on the stage, on those little clouds you saw out in the upper, the top of the, that painted backdrop, on the clothes of the costumes of the actors, on the audience itself. So they will be constantly changing there. We're going to be using Lindner colors. And neutral or silver or white costumes will pick up the colors as they change.
Wow. I guess this then is going to come as close to total immersion in your concept.
Yes.
As any theater piece probably could.
It will. It will be music and dance. Not dance per se, but movement. Which is stylized and choreographic. Cannot be naturalistic movement on that stage. That stage to me looks like a playground. As soon as you get in there, there's a feeling of cabaret, amusement park, all the different entertainment styles.
Yeah.
And And, you know, the use of the winch, the use of those ladders is supposed to slide straight across. You saw those ladders.
Yeah.
Supposed to slide. People make their entrances and exits. That's okay. The other idea might work out, but only if it were very carefully and over a long period.
Mm-hmm.
We saw a situation where the marvelous Joe Neal comes down and does various poses on the ladder, but if it interferes with what's happening downstage, we can't have it.
Yeah.
And it destroys the simplicity and power of what he's doing.
Yeah. But it's just, the techniques are just marvelous, and I must confess that I am not much of a playgoer.
I know.
Because I find very little in most of modern theater that really interests me. But this stuff is powerful and it's exciting. There is enough there to absorb me, I guess, is what I feel.
Well, you saw just the second act. You saw the mating. You saw the mating dance with Lee Allen and Barbara Williams. Barbara Williams is playing the main character. Mm-hmm. Lisa Lucille Patton is playing Mother Marlene. You didn't see her do anything. She's wonderful. And of course, you saw Bob Guillaume playing mm-hmm. Marshall, and Joe Neal playing the aborting or raping doctor, and all of this to music. Very.
Yeah, and it works.
Yeah.
That's the incredible part. Is you don't think that you could just talking about it. It seems sort of incredible that you can put this kind of stuff to music and make it effective. But it's effective.
Well, I went to see the Magic Flute last night,
mm-hmm.
and these themes are not dissimilar, interestingly enough. They're treated differently.
Mm-hmm.
They even have the Moor, you know, we have a black man and his relationship with this particular white woman,
mm-hmm.
among the other relationships she has. And they have a very interesting allusion to a character they call the Moor. And it's supposed, but of course from a completely racist point of view, my material, but entirely different point of view, because in my case, I identify with the black man. In the case of the guy who wrote The Magic Flute, he had the popular conception of the Moor was that he desired the white woman and he was going to pollute and contaminate her. I also have tremendously sexist aspects to unquestioned sexist aspects, which is that the woman is the evil, mother is evil, and so mm-hmm. forth. Although I must say there is an allusion also in my material to a kind of evil mother, but a mother who is evil by order of society and through necessity.
Yeah. There are, I guess, three main themes that I picked up in the little bits that I saw today. And I guess I can just imagine that when people see this work, when feminists see this work, they're going to sit there, and if they're not thinking, they're going to wonder, where's the strong feminist? You know, this isn't solely a feminist work.
Well, it's very feminist.
It is very
my kind of feminist.
Well, it's very feminist, but what you've done is you've managed to incorporate other things into the feminism, and I think that may prove to be confusing for some feminists, some hardline.
If they come expecting a tract, let them stay home.
Yeah.
No tracts.
No,
I don't write them.
I'm not an artist. It's not. It's just because there are in this work elements of sexism as it is worked against us.
Oh, well,
and
how
we deal with it.
Absolutely.
Right? Because the main character is a woman.
But the woman uses another. What I'm the woman in a sadomasochistic society.
Right.
She certainly wasn't a liberated woman.
No.
Who uses those aspects of sexist sadomasochism in order to survive.
Sure.
The whole thing is survival. You didn't hear the survival song, but it's survival.
Yeah.
It's the concentration camp mentality.
Yeah. Yeah. The having a significant secondary character as a black man.
Mm-hmm.
But then brings us into the race question.
Oh, absolutely.
And then, of course, the whole thing is set in Germany.
Well, not the, no. It starts in Germany, but it comes to America. There's a scene, which of course you didn't see because you didn't see the first act run,
right,
which is coming to America from uh-huh. Germany. Third scene, they come to, not just to America, they come to New York.
Yeah.
New York.
New York.
That's it.
The Big Apple. So yeah. So you've managed to work into one work, sexism, racism, and anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm. I consider then, racism and anti-Semitism, you know, the same thing, actually.
Well, sexism is too. I mean, the you can see that those things are intertwined.
Yes.
And can make this into a unified piece of work that makes sense. And what I'm trying to say is that I find that very rare. In other words, it is not a feminist tract,
no,
as you said. It is not
not a
tract dealing with racism. It is not a Jewish tract dealing with, but it combines all of those.
Well, you know, I talk about a society which teaches its individual components to hate
mm-hmm.
themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Hating yourself is very interesting. You hate and destroy yourself, but very often there is projected self-hatred,
yes,
which allows you to hate those others,
right,
whether they be women, blacks, Jews, or whatever. And what I think is that this society works most efficiently when it encourages you to hate and destroy yourself. And it's incredible,
yeah,
incredible how self-destructive women are
yeah.
encouraged to be. It's no accident that we revere those women who have committed suicide.
Sure.
Whether in the script of Love Story or those totems we erect, Marilyn Monroe and Sylvia Plath and so forth, whatever their qualities were as live human beings, they never would have been as successful alive
Mm-mm.
as dead.
Mm-mm.
That's a lesson we constantly learn.
Yeah.
Women are constantly being encouraged to engage in the romance of suicide. Die before you get too old. That's, you haven't seen the third act, but we get
no.
into that, too. I mean, it's bad. Listen, you. All you were good enough for is to be a sex object.
Right.
But don't commit the obscenity of being an old sex object.
No.
And, of course, this is, to some extent, about suicide. It's about that urge to self-destruct. If we can get Freudian, the id is the little Lisa, and the superego is Mother Marlene, the incorporated value system that works against you and so forth. And we want to get Jungian, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a kind of, there's the anima, which is the little creature who becomes more and more demonic, the part of her that's repressed and mutilated
mm-hmm.
and exacts punishment. There are a lot of layers here.
yeah, a lot. Do you think, how do you think it's going to go? Yeah, it's going to be in previews for...
Well, I have had instruction in how apple pie... See, I'm not exactly a novice because one year ago, there was a showcase, a workshop, directed by Ray Allen
mm-hmm.
at the Public Theater. And we had cancellation lines every night. People couldn't get in. I don't know. I think at that time, you didn't get in, did you?
No.
No, I think you asked me and I told you. It was impossible.
Yeah.
I couldn't get tickets.
Yeah.
In a workshop in Buffalo where students were used, and the students were, some of them, very good, but certainly not professional. Again, people sold out every night. And people really responded to it. Now, there have been some cold or confused matinee audiences here
yeah.
and there, but not really, because we just could not. We didn't have enough tickets. The only reason we didn't continue with the workshop situation is that Guillaume had a contract last year, and we definitely wanted him. So this year, it ought to be, of course, better.
Yeah.
Yes, because it's been worked on. There have been two revisions since then. All the script is back together. In both the Buffalo and the original New York productions, great chunks of script were lopped off to conform to the exigencies of that production situation.
Yeah.
It will be beautifully designed by Mitchell and Pat Collins, who's the lighting designer, and who really relate to the work. They really connect to it. And we will have the additional input by the Lindner thing, which is full of resonance.
Yeah.
The actors themselves are gorgeous. There isn't a person that cannot sing and dance and act. That includes, there are 9 characters. I've given you 4 of them. Lucille Patton as Mother Marlene, Lisa as Barbara Williams as Lisa. Bob Guillaume, which, by the way, sounds a lot like Barbara Williams. Guillaume is French for William. Isn't it funny?
Yeah.
Bob Guillaume is Marshall. And Lee Allen as Harry. You saw him dance.
Yeah, he's
incredible.
Fabulous.
Incredible. They're all fabulous. I mean, we can't say that one is more fabulous than the other. They're all fabulous.
Yeah.
Joe Neal as the boarding and raping doctor. Spain Logue as Streiter. John Watson as a Nazi and a businessman. And oh dear, Robert Poulance, he's the last one. He plays the American that she is supposed to marry. That happens at the end of the first act.
Mm.
That she almost marries. American. He used to be Aryan, but he became American. And he looks like a stormtrooper. He looks like a stormtrooper.
Is there a difference?
His hair is blonde, his eyes are blue, his nature-given nose is small and well-shaped, his chin is strong, barbed wire sifted through his skin, his voice is carefully devoid of feeling. That's who he is. I am not singing well, folks, but I'm not one of the people you'll see doing this. But that's an example of, you see, that's not an ordinary song, although we have two or three songs. That is not an ordinary song. That's simply a spoken, it's a sung scene.
You know what this morning reminded me of more than probably anything else? Opera.
Oh, it isn't? We cannot tell you, folks, but it's an honest-to-God American vernacular opera.
Yeah.
It has some rock music in it, but it is not a rock opera.
No.
It is an American contemporary vernacular opera, but we can't call it that. So nowadays we have a new thing. This woman said that my work is where the opera and the musical meet 5 years hence. So we call it music theater. Stuart Ostro has some sort of music theater lab he's backing now. They want to develop this as an art form, and it's become more and more prevalent for work that is more serious than a musical and not as conventionally structured. Yes, it could be called an opera.
It's
very.
I don't think I've been to a quote unquote musical, and I don't remember when. And one of the reasons is because there's nothing sillier than watching two people get involved in some sort of interaction, and then have one or the other or both of them burst into song.
Right.
But this has the music running all the way through.
Yeah.
And it's marvelous.
It's like speech.
Yeah.
We deliberately perfected, we hope, the stresses and accents of normal speech, so we don't have that, hello, how are you? There's none of that.
Yeah.
And it's all in our American, you know, idiom.
Yeah. That's the thing that's silly about opera, too. I saw a piece of oh dear, The Barber of Seville. The other night was on Channel 13, right?
Well,
and it was, you know, it's right. It was beautiful, and the music is nice. But every once in a while, and I had the what do you call it? The words in the translation.
The libretto.
The libretto.
That's
from
what, yeah.
From when I had seen it live someplace else, and I started to get into it, and after a while, it got to be almost silly because the performers, of course, have to spend a great deal of time and attention on the music.
Absolutely.
Right? At the expense of what they're actually singing or saying.
Sometimes. It isn't always true.
Not always, but it's enough to detract. But what you've done fits.
I think it amplifies the power of the material. As a matter of fact, it takes the curse off the material. See, the only way to do this material was with music.
Yeah.
There was no way I could do it without it. very, it's, and there's a kind of, the amplification is an extra clarity, an extra interpretation, a visceral interpretation which the music gives. You get, a message comes to you which is not directly cerebral
right.
through the head, but to the guts.
Yeah.
And that's the message I'm interested in.
Yeah.
And of course the visual message, you know.
Well, it's working on you from just about every different level. The only sense you've left out, I guess, is a sense of feel, maybe. I mean, to get actually up there and touch.
When she sings to Marshall, I felt, I don't know about you, but I was...
No, I mean, come on, Myrna. I
yes,
mean, actually get
no,
up there and touch.
No, you cannot touch the actors.
Do not
singers.
Touch the actors.
It will disturb them.
Yes.
I would like to touch them. You notice I do a lot. I
yeah.
like to kiss and hug them.
Yeah, well, they're marvelous.
Yeah, they
they're
really
marvelous.
Are.
Nice.
I mean, at that theater, I don't, you know, it's funny. You know, we've got sales into the fourth week already, in case you're interested. And a couple of benefits. And the ticket sales are terrific. And I love audiences, but the part that is so exciting to me is where there's no audience in that theater. And the theater is really mine.
Yeah.
And I can touch it and roam all over it and swing from things. And I love that theater.
Put your feet up on the seats.
Yeah. Oh, no, don't say that. I don't do that.
Don't do that.
I
don't
do it. I put them up on the rail. The
yeah.
Anspacher Theater at the Public Theater is the most gorgeous thing to me that I've ever seen. It's a mystery theater. I love it.
Yeah.
It's a little problem with acoustics, but I'm sure that can be solved. And that was where Madonna played, you know. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Madonna was right there. So, I don't know, that seems, I feel like it's mine, I should have a lease on it, I don't want to give it back.
The theater you mean?
That one,
yeah.
The Anspacher, I don't want to give back. I wish it could play forever, and I would never have to give the damn thing back to Joe.
It's, well, could part of that be because it's named for a woman?
Oh, you knew about that.
Well, it's...
The Florence song.
It's hanging right there as you walk in.
Isn't that funny? I never noticed that.
It's a theater
yes,
with a woman's
name for a woman.
With a woman's name on it.
Yes. And well, most of the Mitzi Newhouse. I don't know about the Newman. I'm remiss. I don't know. I think that may be named for a woman too. Yeah. Most of his theaters are named for women. Well, Joe's office is. You should come sometime during the week.
Mm.
It is women wall to wall. To women in his outer office. To women in the script department. A woman in the center office, a woman in the outer office, the reception office. Just go downstairs, and there are women there too. It's different. It seemed to me the proportion has changed, and they're really wonderful women.
Well, most women are, I think.
Hmm?
Most women are, I think. Wonderful.
I don't know. I'll say it when I see it, but if I'm not going to make a blanket statement. You know, there are women I don't like.
Sure, sure.
Some of my worst enemies are women.
Well.
Yes. No, some of my worst enemies are me. It's the real truth.
Well, that's what the play is all about.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Now that we've told you what the whole thing is about, I trust that you will not throw up your hands and stay home and say, I know what it's
wonderful.
All about.
It's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's powerful, it's exciting, and it's sexy. It is a sexy, sexy work, you gotta admit.
Yes.
It's really sexy. And what I think you ought to do is I think you ought to call up and buy tickets if you can. It's going to, because if we're sold out, then there won't be any problem, we can just go ahead and do it. I don't know, I'm not sure. You know, the funny thing is I think we may already be sold out for the first couple of weeks. But I have so much anxiety about this work. I've worked on it for 6 years. And I have absolute faith I can't call my own work genius. It's not polite on the radio. But I have...
I'll call it genius.
All right, you call it genius.
I'll call it genius.
Okay, that's polite. Now...